Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced. From the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support, the new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with 2 tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to RadioBeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's RadioBeats.com, code DEAL.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Welcome to Edge of Sports, the podcast brought to you by The Nation Magazine. I'm Dave Zirin. This week we are going back to the Basketball Butterfly Effect series with Houston aficionado Aria Shirazi. Basketball Butterfly Effect, when we look at draft decisions that came out, how the NBA world as we now know it would have been dramatically altered if a critical decision had gone in the other direction. far we've looked at the 2003 draft and asked what the world would be like if the Pistons come out with Anthony instead of Darko Milicic. We looked at the 1996 draft and asked what if the Charlotte Hornets had held on to future legend 18-year-old Kobe B. Bryant instead of trading him to the Lakers for the paint-huffing, Virginia Slim sucking Vlade Divac. And we wondered how history would have been different if in 1984 the Portland Trail Blazers with the number 2 pick had resisted big sexy Sam Bowie and gone with this guy named Michael Jordan. We also, on a more serious note, looked at the 1986 Len Bias draft and asked what could have been. But tonight we have a good one. We go to the 1993 draft and a forgotten trade that if it had never happened, well, we'd be living in a much different world. 1993, the first pick in the draft was held by the Orlando Magic. This was a little weird because they had improved dramatically the previous season from being utterly hideous to 41-41, thanks to rookie center and aspiring rapper Shaquille O'Neal, aka Shaq Fu. And somehow, through the draft lottery, they got the number 1 pick. And they picked the consensus choice, Michigan All-American Chris Webber. They even put Shaq on the phone with him, and they talked on live TV about how no one would ever get a rebound again when they play the Magic. Then, with the number 2 pick, the 76ers, of course, they select Sean Bradley, rest in peace. And with the 3rd pick, the Golden State Warriors selected Anfernee Penny Hardaway, a brilliant tall point guard out of Memphis. And I remember this too. They immediately put him on the phone with Tim Hardaway, and they joshed about an all Hardaway backcourt in Golden State. Then the trade. Webber now in Golden State, and Hardaway in Orlando, and hoops has changed forever. Let's go to Arya Shirazi. And before we get into the butterfly effect, if the trade hadn't happened, I have 3 questions for you. First, is there anything you want to add to that sum up, anything I missed about the trade?
No, I think you covered everything with it.
Okay, cool. So let's, before we talk about what their careers could have been, let's talk a little bit about Chris Webber's career. Please, if you could, like your thoughts about Webber's career, its trajectory, and frankly, whether it reached its awesome promise that he showed at the University of Michigan.
Well, briefly, as you had said, Webber was the number 1 pick and at the time considered the consensus number 1. And I had seen a lot of Webber at Michigan and that Michigan Fab Five Wolverine squad over the 2 years that he had been there. Very successful 2 years, back-to-back losses in the national championship. So I was familiar with his game on the college level, and I did not take him for a number 1 overall pick, actually, and definitely not the consensus, no questions asked, number 1, which he appeared to be. He was an excellent front court player, both skill-wise, IQ-wise, and athleticism-wise, with a great body, but again, I didn't necessarily see that development from All-America College big man to All-Star power forward for sure. I didn't know if it would translate to that level. And I actually felt similarly about Penny at Memphis, whose game I was less familiar with than I had been at Webber. He didn't get quite the exposure in college that Michigan did. And what I had known of Hardaway was that he was a great player and kind of a unique player, point guard at that height, but also wasn't sure that he was worthy of an overall number 1 pick. But as far as Webber goes, Webber comes in, as you said, the draft day trade happened, so he never plays with Shaq. He goes to Golden State playing with a good veteran squad under Don Nelson and has a really good year, wins Rookie of the Year. And then in unusual circumstances, which we'll get into over the course of this conversation, he's granted free agency after his rookie year in an unusual clause that didn't really exist shortly after that, and winds up being traded to Washington, where he puts up big numbers amid some injury-riddled seasons on some pretty uninspiring Wizards squads that don't win a lot of games. And it's a few years later, it's after 5 years, that he gets traded to Sacramento, also at the time kind of a moribund franchise that hadn't done anything really in forever. He gets traded for an aging Mitch Richmond, and it's in Sacramento that he really builds his reputation, his legend, and becomes a player that I did not necessarily see, kind of exceeds my expectations of what he can do on the NBA level, becoming an all-NBA performer and becoming the centerpiece of an emerging team in Sacramento that is hoping to knock off the Lakers and represent the West, and is kind of becomes a fashionable choice for a few years to do just that, and obviously comes very, very close to doing it. They don't get over the hump. He suffers further injuries and never really, and then begins kind of a downward spiral, both in games played per years and kind of numbers and impact, and retires, after bouncing around to a few more teams, and is looked at as kind of a surefire Hall of Famer, and actually takes longer than expected to actually get voted into the hall where he now resides, and is held up as one of kind of the impact and great players of his era, being the 90s into the early 2000s. So that's kind of a nutshell of Chris Webber's career. Is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, just one thing is that I always felt like the writers and the basketball people punished him for not reaching the potential that they saw for him when he came out of Michigan. That's why I thought your analysis was really interesting, because, you know, looking at it from the perspective of, well, what if he hit a height that maybe he wasn't built to reach when he was in Sacramento? Maybe we need to look at it like that. And then, of course, injuries derailed the rest of it, unfortunately. While a lot of these basketball media people, like, they compare him to people like Kevin Garnett or obviously Tim Duncan. Now, Duncan's on a whole nother level, but, you know, Garnett got his MVP. Garnett got his ring with the Celtics. Garnett's career kind of has this narrative to it. Weber's career has a much rockier, less satisfying narrative. And I think he gets punished for that.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of validity to what you say. And actually, I never considered Weber actually in that category. And then, so as far as him, Chris comes in to a league and a West where Karl Malone is still the class of power forwards and wins both of his MVPs once Weber is already a few years into his career. And then his more contemporaries, Garnett and Duncan, come in accumulating individual honors, and in Duncan's case, championships. If Weber falls short against those players, I agree with him falling short. I never felt that he was that player. And even when these players made up the class of the Western Conference forwards, the Western Conference power forwards, both in All-Star and All-NBA recognition and playoff wins, I never considered Weber on that level of Duncan or Garnett, which was why I was surprised when those Sacramento teams, which granted were not a one-man show by any stretch, but he was the centerpiece and kind of the franchise player of that squad, they had overachieved, in my opinion, and his stature elevated for me and many other people as that team was becoming more successful and trying to challenge for Western Conference supremacy. One other thing I would like to say, Dave, is he might you were talking about kind of him not getting his due, or almost the media or writers kind of punishing him in a way. As much as his competition and his position, I think Penny Hardaway had a great deal to do with that, because due to the draft day trade, they are forever linked. And Penny, his superstar, comes on instantly, comes on quicker than Weber's, both his individual performance, his personality, and his stardom, his superstardom.
Little Penny.
And Little Penny, of course. And the fact that he plays with Shaq, goes to a finals in his second year, and is really, in a way, especially from basketball smarks, considered the driving force behind that team, considered the poetic aspect behind that team, considered the leader behind that team, and with good cause. So I think Weber suffers his whole career, reputation-wise and perception-wise, being compared to how quickly Penny became a top five player in the league, that was, for a very brief time, expected to be on top of the league with multiple championships, or at least multiple championship appearances to his name. And then it's kind of ironic that Penny's star, largely due to injuries and some other circumstances, is dashed prematurely and far earlier than anybody expected, and really as it should have. And as that's happening, Weber starts to rise again,
Yeah.
And the script kind of flips.
I mean, injuries plagued both of their careers. And one of the butterfly effect questions is, we all know that so much of basketball is situational. What happens if they're in other places? If Weber's in Orlando, Hardaway is in Golden State, maybe they don't have the injuries. Who knows? Maybe they are able to play their careers, and we don't have to ask what if with regards to both of their potentials. Because I do think Weber missed having this whole, what could have been really cool, back end of his career, like Garnett had. If not, you know, remember Weber on the 76ers dragging his foot up and down the court?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tough to watch.
Yes. And it only got worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, God. On Detroit, as like an eighth man, as they went for a championship, it was like, come on, man.
No, both of them really, again, had too brief a period in their athletic and physical primes when health allowed them to really maximize their games and their youthful bodies. The interesting thing that I have been thinking about, one of the many interesting things preparing for this discussion and leading to listening to you introduce it, is the conversations that we've had the past few episodes, primarily the first three. We are talking about moves that led to championships and championship eras. These two players who we're talking about, again, forever linked in history because of the draft day trade, have zero championships to their name. Both as featured performers or as supporting players in, as you said, the back end of their careers. They never even get an Alonzo Mourning or Gary Payton style championship to conclude their career. So we're not talking about moves that led to championships. We're talking about moves that led to almost championships and falling short of championships. So the question, one of the many questions, is if that draft day trade doesn't happen, and that's not the way that they start their careers, do they find themselves in different championship situations, or is the championship picture in their respective conferences altered because of that?
That's the question right there, for sure. And then that'll get to that first point, which is this a championship club I'm about to share with you? Shaquille O'Neal at the center position, Chris Webber at the four, Nick Anderson at the three, Dennis Scott at the two, and this is where it gets a little tricky. It would be Scott Skiles at point, because Scott Skiles actually did largely start at point Penny's rookie year, and they would sort of cycle Penny in a little bit, play him off the ball. Skiles had a pretty firm handle on the role. So that's my starting five for this team, is Skiles, Scott, Anderson, Shaq, and Webb. And not a lot on the bench, unless you think Todd Lichty has that special Stanford something.
I don't.
You do not. So what are your thoughts on that team?
My thoughts are that, and pardon me if I'm jumping a little bit ahead, but I think that the trade actually worked out correct for both teams. And we're going back to 93 and the anticipation of that draft and the anticipation that Webber is going to be the number one pick. And Shaq is coming off his monstrous rookie year, where he's really kind of the talk of the league going into his second year already. And, and is already a major factor that teams around the league are looking at having to adjust to, only 1 year in. And looking at that O'Neal and Webber pairing, it has the potential, especially now in hindsight, to look at them playing together at that time and say that that would be kind of a nuts inside 4-5 tandem, both offensively, defensively, and on the boards. But the real history is that there was Shaq and Penny is almost a perfect combination. And, and there have been, I think, books and at least one really good 30 for 30 addressing just that, addressing how Shaq's decision to bolt Orlando in 96 after only 4 years with the team really submarined what very well could have been a run of championship appearances for them, even with the team that Chicago put together at that time, which wound up going for three championships. And it is Orlando's decision to cash Webber in for Hardaway that where they then turn to Horace Grant to fill that role at the four. And coming off those three perimeter players who you've mentioned, Horace winds up being the perfect front court mate for O'Neal and fifth starter for that unit that enables them to make that championship appearance and have hopes of becoming a dynasty that winds up not happening for them. My feeling is I don't know that Webber, having more offensive potential and explosiveness than Horace ever had, is content to play that ultra complementary role on offense that Horace does. So it might be a bit of a bumpier transition in addition to his youth. And also, I'm a big Scott Skiles fan, and Scott was still a good ball player at that point. But looking at him replacing what Penny brought for those few years where they were really a beautiful squad, I almost find it a stretch to say that Weber in his first few years in the league, playing still in the shadow of Shaq, and not having Penny as that, you know, as that 1A star, I don't see them going higher than they wound up doing after making the trade. And my feeling is that they would have had to find Skiles' replacement to take their to take the team to that level that they wound up achieving, albeit briefly, with Penny.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think the part that's so seductive about Weber and Shaq on the same team is one thing that Weber was really good at was passing out of the post, off the wing. I mean, he really made that Sacramento team hum, as did, of course, Divots and Mike Bibby, you know, White Chocolate and all of them. But I can see him and Shaq just being a lethal combination with interior passing. But I also think there's a reason why prime Shaq never played with a flashy power forward. He always played with what he always needed was the wing. Whether it was Hardaway, Kobe, or Wade, like that's what he needed to thrive was a wing, not a star power forward. It doesn't quite work. It's like nuts and gum. But at the same time, I feel like they're both so talented, they could have made it work and would have given us something very exciting, a very exciting product, seeing them out there together. It's a tough one, all right. And then we can I'm agreeing with, like, I just don't think Shaq works with a star power forward. And I don't know why I'm saying this, but I feel like, you know, the sad thing about Penny not staying healthy and Shaq not staying in Orlando is that Penny also, unlike, say, Kobe, had the perfect temperament to go with Shaq. Shaq was big, Shaq was flashy, and Penny was cool. You know, Kobe, of course, ran really hot and, you know, get frustrated with Shaq not being in shape and getting the shots and all the rest of it. It's like Penny was operating on a more zen level. So I wish those two had been able to stay together and do their thing. I don't know why I'm saying this, but I feel like Weber and Shaq would have had ego problems. Weber, you know, was in a great situation at Golden State and forced himself out of there. I remember when Don Nelson offered to quit if Weber would stay.
Yeah, the whole thing was unusual. And I think even to this, you know, it's fun that we're talking about this right now because it's 30 years old. Yeah. Which is crazy.
Exactly.
You know, we're talking about something that happened 30 years ago. And you're so right when you're talking about fit and the difficulty of an all-star power forward playing alongside O'Neal. I think throughout Shaq's career, if we look at the four men he played with, they're almost always complementary players, total role players in the Horace Grant mold, because that's what worked. Because what we are talking about is a very specific, is the era. Right now, saying that doesn't mean as much in positionless basketball and everybody shooting threes and power forwards like Lauri Markkanen, playing out on the perimeter and, you know, being 7 foot and playing like a 6'8" guy. We're talking about 1993 through the remainder of that decade, where being an all-star power forward meant that you were doing work inside. Players could take their games outside as well, could take it to the perimeter, could make plays off the dribble. That's what separated a really good power forward from an all-star, and Weber certainly in that all-star category. But as you were saying correctly, Chris Weber was an inside player, and whether it was facing up, his back to the basket, or just, you know, tip dunking off missed shots or beating other fours in transition. It was very much that physicality, the athleticism inside, and nobody commanded their team's interior more than Shaq, both physically and, you know, kind of spiritually. So the idea, so somebody like Weber, who was such a good inside player, would have had to absolutely subjugate his game in order to play next to O'Neal, which, as you would have said, you could see him balking at that, or at least that being a rough transition for him and for the team, whereas Penny wound up being the perfect complement and didn't have those kind of spacing conflicts. Weber in Gold State was, I don't think that there's another situation like it where somebody was the number one pick, had a rookie of the year season, and then only played that one year on the team. And I remember being very disappointed when it wound up being a one-year experiment, not only because I was always a fan of the Don Nelson Warriors, really, you know, any team that Nelly ever coached, but also because you look at that squad, which, you know, under the Run TMC years had always been a lot of fun and always had kind of a second round ceiling. They weren't going to be there at the end. When Weber came on board as the number one pick, and showed himself instantly to be an impact player, he was playing with guys like Latrell Sprewell, Chris Mullin, as you had said, Tim Hardaway, and Billy Owens, which looking back now is like, you know, one of my favorite squads ever. I wish I could watch that team play now. But, you know, and Weber continuing to grow every year. It's too bad that he forced himself out of that situation after that single successful year, because I really would have liked to see what that team, not only with Nelson's schemes, but the multi-dimensional players that he had at that time to plug into those roles. I think if not playing for championships, would have been a really, really fun factor in an already fun Western Conference at that time. So we were deprived of that for a few fairly unmemorable years in D.C.
And of course, if Weber doesn't go to Golden State and doesn't force his way out, Latrell Sprewell probably never chokes P.J. Carlesimo.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Everything.
And if he doesn't, if he doesn't choke Carlesimo, he doesn't get kicked out in the league. And then the Knicks take a chance on him and go to the finals, and probably one of the five most memorable Knicks teams ever.
A draft day trade in 93 creates reverberations a decade in with teams that weren't even involved in that initial trade, which is why we do these shows.
Well, let me also just throw at you. That would have been a great sum up, except I also want to add that it would have been really cool to see what Don Nelson would have done with Penny Hardaway. That would have been some ahead of its time stuff, I think. You know, I keep thinking of with Nelly, the way he understood Paul Pressey was a better ball handler than Sidney Moncrief. And so ran the ball offensively through Moncrief in this case being Sprewell, because Tim Hardaway was injured that whole year, next year. And Penny just running the point from day one, none of this Scott Skiles bullshit, but just running it from game one. It took a while for Brian Hill, you know, the great Brian Hill, to be convinced that Hardaway should be playing the one. I remember like people screaming that you know, that what the hell are you doing? This kid is a point guard. So
Yeah.
No, this is really interesting. It's also a trade. I mean, what's so interesting about this to me is that it's a trade of two people who didn't, who I, because of injuries, didn't hit their ceiling.
I feel like as much as any player of that time, Penny Hardaway's game has gotten lost in translation, or because it didn't have the longevity, and because of the time distance now, I feel that who Penny Hardaway was as a player was really spectacular. And there's still not been a carbon copy of Penny. It's hard to really describe how he came into the league. And having the exposure that he did, playing with O'Neal and the success that Orlando immediately had, with that core. So talking about him playing under Nelson is absolutely a tantalizing prospect. And I mean, as much as we've been talking about Weber and the accomplishments that Weber had, and the fact that Chris's prime was cut shorter than really than it should have been, Penny is really, to me, the if there's an element of tragedy here, it is Penny, because after Shaq leaves, Penny has a major chip on his shoulder, and it's also the point where Penny gets to show that he's a true franchise player, and what can an Orlando team with unquestionably led by Hardaway and almost unburdened by building a team around Shaquille, what does that team look like, and what can they accomplish? And I think that he has maybe one healthy year post Shaq in Orlando, where he's fantastic, where he plays at an MVP level. And then he suffers the first knee injury that he never really returns from. Really, the sad part of both of those guys' trajectories is that they limped around on one leg for the second half of their careers. And for two players like that, who played like that and moved like that, to have their athletic prime shortened, thus diminishing what they were able to do, was really very sad. And we've talked about Weber. In Hardaway's case, really kind of creates an opening. I mean, that Orlando team, and even just Penny in particular, is looked at for those few years in the mid-90s as possibly the player that's going to lead the league forward. Jordan is older, Stockton is older, Malone is older, Barkley's pretty much on his way out. So Hardaway, along with Shaq, are really the two guys looked at as the big man and the guard, who either together or then separately can possibly take this league forward. And then instead of Hardaway, it really winds up becoming players like Allen Iverson, Tim Duncan, and Kobe Bryant fill that role, both in terms of individual awards and championship appearances.
Well, that's 1993 basketball butterfly effect. Chris Webber, Penny Hardaway in a special game of Trading Places. All right, favorite line from Trading Places? What's yours? Why don't I do mine?
Where in Hell is Beaks? No, there's better ones than that.
No, that's fantastic.
Such a great film.
$5. Maybe I'll go to the movies by myself. Half of it is from me. Thank you, Mr. Mortimer.
Timeless.
Oh, so timeless. Good. Oh, my God.
A Philadelphia classic.
Abso-frickin-lutely. And much funnier than Philadelphia.
Yeah, funnier, for sure.
Yes. All right. Well, for everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Everybody at The Nation Magazine, thank you so much. Peace.